This is an extemporaneous prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, website mbeinstitute.org. The focus will be on plank number 30 of 32, and all 32 planks are covered in the textbook of Christian Science, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, on the pages 330 through 340. The 32 planks each have the separate titles within those 11 pages, and in the introductory paragraph, she states that when the letter and the spirit are lived, then we will be able to demonstrate healing. She calls it the infallibility of the system of divine metaphysics. The specific topic for this plank number 30 is divine pardon. Following is the text for this plank in prose format. Divine pardon. The destruction of sin is the divine method of pardon. Divine life destroys death. Truth destroys error. Love destroys hate. Being destroyed, sin needs no other form of forgiveness. Does not God's pardon, destroying anyone's sin, prophesy and involve the final destruction of all sin? Following are each one of the key points in numbered format. Number 1. The destruction of sin is the divine method of pardon. It is common for an individual that thinks someone else has committed a sin that they decide that they will forgive that individual. Does that line up with what this states about divine pardon? Does it do any good to try to forgive someone unless we have condemned them? Is that part of our job description, our life description, to condemn someone else for anything, at any time, under any circumstances? Francis Fluno was a homeopathic doctor, and when he discovered Christian Science, he gave up his former profession and devoted his efforts to becoming a Christian Science practitioner. And in 1898, he was appointed to the Board of Lectureship. His first lecture was in Hawaii. He lived in Oakland, California at the time, and he had already been awarded a CSD degree by Mary Baker Eddy, Doctorate of Christian Science. And he wrote an article entitled Criticism. It is only a page and a half, so I shall read it as the message is directly related to the topic of this plank number 30 entitled Divine Pardon. Criticism by Dr. Francis J. Fluno. Criticism is fault finding. It shuts you out of heaven. It will darken all your skies. It will keep you from demonstrating for yourself and others. It will bar you from progress. It leads you into all trouble. It leads you into all discord, into all unkindness, impatience, hard-heartedness, unfriendliness, and finally into all evil, hatefulness, and envy. Just as long as that spirit of criticism remains in your thought and you leave it there, just so long will you not progress. Just so long will you not be able to demonstrate. Just so long will you not be able to find your way in truth. Because you will be looking for faults constantly. You are fault-finding on a mortal material plane. You will criticize everybody and everything. You will criticize people in every way. The clothes they wear, the way they walk, the way they talk, and the way they enunciate, the way they pronounce their words, the way they sing, and everything they do in every possible way. And that is all you will do. If the spirit of criticism is abroad in your heart, it is growing. I do not say that it is there, but if it is, and it is not removed after being detected, it will, of course, remain there and grow. Then, by and by, you will want to know why you do not understand and cannot demonstrate the truth, as you would like to. It is because you are finding fault with people, finding fault with what they do and say. You are not looking for truth, and so are not finding truth in what is done. But you are studying faults. Faults are what you are looking for, and they are all you are thinking of. Criticism is the worst thing that you can get into your thoughts. It is one of the keys to perdition, because it leads you there. It leads to all unkindness. It leads into ingratitude. It leads into everything but love for your neighbors and friends. Anyone can criticize. I never saw a person so great an idiot if he could talk at all. But he could find fault with others. Anyone can do it. And just as soon as you let it enter your thought and leave it there, it will grow until you soon will think you are an elected critic. That is your mission. That is what you are here for. That is the work you are to do. Criticism is an awful thing. It never did any good and never will do any good. It never can, because it is all on a mortal plane, every bit of it. You are not helping others. You are not helping yourself. It does not belong to Christian Science, for there is nothing Christian about it. There is not anything scientific about it. Not one thing. I have seen it all my life. I have seen it from earliest childhood, and I know every one of you has. And it is a thing that ought to be well looked into, to see whether you have it or not. Because you are a student of Christian Science. You are a student of the science of being. If you are studying that, you will progress in everything you do. Nothing you touch, but you will do well with it. Because Christian Science leads to wisdom, love, kindness, and satisfaction. It leads the way to kindness to everyone, to helpfulness for everyone. And it will lead you to see opportunities and will open up opportunities to you that you never saw before in everything, in every walk of life, to become better in everything you do. Everything you touch will grow out of plainness before you. Everything is elucidated. Everything is made plain, and everything is made easy. There are no hard roads and no hard work. In fact, you will find no such thing as hard times and no hard work to get along. If you are studying the great facts themselves, the great trouble is to let go of mortal sense and study truth. Study the facts of being. Do you think you have to hold on with one hand to mortal law and its way of living? If you will let go, you will find your living sure, and you will find a better living and an easier life than you ever had before. We lose our sense of worry. We lose the worry of business. We lose the worry of finding business. We lose the thought of our body. You will then lose the thought of losing your life, of losing your health, because you are growing into strength, life, health, freedom, because you are growing into true manhood and womanhood. You are growing to be better scholars of yourself and students of Christian Science. You are not students of the way people walk along the street, finding fault with the way they walk, with the cut of their dress, with the cut of their coat, finding fault with their habits, with their shortcomings, with their little faults and little feelings. You are students of Christian Science. That's the end of that article. Here's an interesting fact about Mary Baker Eddy's schedule. There's no question that she had very short time that she allocated to sleep. And so there were many hours a day that she was awake. She made the statement that during her waking hours, every hour, she devoted time for self-examination to make sure that she was not criticizing or finding fault in any way with anyone. And she was attacked by everyone all the time. Her own church, board of directors, other officers. She was attacked constantly. Every hour, self-examination. In her metaphysical college, she gave 7 prayers, which were very special, and they were all entitled Diapason of Heaven. And I will read one of them to you at the end of this. But within each prayer, and she devoted one to each of the 7 synonymous terms. So one is focused on mind, one is on spirit, and so forth. And she stated that we should repeat those prayers often. She doesn't say what often is, but it would be very easy to tailor any one of those prayers to yourself. And when you hear the prayer or you read it, we have them all on the website, you can see where you could place the word man in there and where you could indicate that you are an individual manifestation of man. So So this applies to you. So don't just speak in the third person. Incorporate yourself into that, and by that I mean your spiritual self, not a mortal view of a sinning mortal man. Those three words, sinning mortal man, are three words that Mary Baker Eddy used to describe Jesus' view of the individuals that he healed as viewed by those around him. But she points out that his view had to be about the individual being an innocent spiritual image and likeness of God. If he had a view of them as being a sinning mortal man, he couldn't heal them. He would be on the same level in which they were. Our duty is to lift up our thought if it contains a single element which is unlike God. The process is easy to define. One, only think good about everyone and everything, no matter what anyone else is thinking or saying about you. Self-examine on a regular, frequent basis, and remember what the downside is if you don't do this. He says, criticism leads to all evil. That's the path we do not want to be on. Point number two. Divine life destroys death. We state in the prayer treatment that life, and this is a capital L, meaning God, because whenever a word is capitalized, that means God, unless it's part of a title or the first word of a sentence, and then it may or may not mean God, depending on how it's used. But in this case, I'm referring to life as God. Life is defined as living the symbols that express and reflect life, which is God. And one way to do it is to think about expressing the qualities of God. We can think in terms of the seven synonymous terms and any number of words that define the seven synonymous terms as used by Mary Baker Eddy in the textbook. There are links to two introductions along with the link to this particular prayer. And in one of those introductions, there's a background about the founder, which is Helen Wright, of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, she and her husband. She was really the author, and she authored a book entitled Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. And in that book, there are seven chapters that relate to the seven synonymous terms for God. The first one is chapter 4 that relates to mind, chapter 5 to spirit, and so forth. And along with that book, there is a list of every word that Mary Baker Eddy used in the textbook to define each of the seven synonymous terms. So there's somewhere around 50 or 60 or 70 terms that define the primary synonymous term. So there's probably somewhere in the order of, oh, I don't know, maybe 350 or 400, maybe 500 words. So you can use any of those words, if you use them correctly, that go to the proper synonymous term. And you can think about those words and expressing the qualities in those words as expressing the primary synonymous term itself. If you do that, in your life, you are living the divine life. Because you're living the qualities, or the terms that define the qualities, for the synonymous terms that define God. And when you do that, you are destroying the belief of death. Because death is the opposite of life. And whenever you are expressing life, you're hacking away at any foundation that there could be for death. Some people are living death while they're alive. In other words, they're not doing anything constructive. They're not doing anything spiritual. They're not doing any giving. Now, our duty does not include, or our prerogatives do not include, criticizing others, as we've just read from the paper on criticism. All I'm trying to do is give you an example of how life does not have to be expressed just because we are alive. Life means that we are productive with what we're doing, that we are giving and not taking, that we're transforming wherever we are, step by step, to a better understanding and therefore a higher dimension of spirituality. And that's where we get the most pleasure. And that's real pleasure. That's honest pleasure. It's joyful. And it's permanent. As long as we don't backslide. And we won't backslide if we keep our thought on the right path. One of the great beauties of Christian Science is the power of prevention. I know of a family, 4 kids. The mother and father were raised in science from when they were quite young, and they raised their family. And as a Christian Scientist, you're entitled, well, I don't know what the law is now, but at that time, they were entitled to an exemption in school of taking any classes that had to do with disease or the body or any of that kind of thing. They had to take other classes to make up the time, you know, to get the credit, but they didn't have to take those classes. The school was a 12-year school that their children attended. It was a county school. They were out in the country. And occasionally, the school would have a student that would have perfect attendance for the year. And they would give them a certificate. This family, all 4 kids, had perfect attendance every year. Every year. Imagine. 12 years, and never miss a day of school. That family had 3 girls and 1, not a day. And the mother never missed a day. She was a homemaker. And the father owned a business. He never missed a day. That's called preventative. The cure is not needed very often if you're a good Christian Scientist that does your work. Now, in the case of children, the parents are responsible for that. And when you have a father that is in business, then the responsibility is more with the mother than with the mother and father as a team. Because a team, depending on the business, but this particular family, the father was gone probably 12 hours a day because he traveled in other areas and he had a crew of men. And so it's not where he basically could do whatever he wanted to anytime just because he was the owner of the business, but he never missed a day of work. And the kind of work that he was involved in was hazardous work. It was classified as hazardous work. And there was never an accident for any of his men all that time. First 2 years or so when he was working for someone else in that same line of business and learning it until he got to the point that he felt the preventative. No childhood diseases. The boy said that he was playing with a neighbor boy. They were about the same age. And the boy cut himself. I don't know, his hand or finger or something, and it was bleeding. And he said, the boy immediately said, I have to take care of this and put methylate on it so I don't get any germs. And the boy didn't even know what he was talking about. Didn't even know what a germ was, because that was not a part of his education. He had no fear of it. He didn't have any idea what his friend was saying about putting this stuff called methylate. I don't know. It's a totally different life when you're relying on God to be your guide. You automatically think differently about everything. If you're a good Christian Scientist, you think differently about everything and everyone. No one is too young to benefit. Now, the key point we were just discussing, divine life. Life is a capital L. And the next one is truth. Point number 3. Truth destroys error. Key point number 3. And truth is intended to mean God. It's a capital T because it's the first word in the sentence, but it is capitalized also because it means God. Truth destroys error. If we don't use wisdom, then we're definitely letting error control us. One of the qualities of mind is intelligence. If we're not using intelligence in what we're doing, including what we just talked about, living our life, then we're going to be incurring mistakes and errors in whatever it is. If it's a matter of making a decision and we lack wisdom, or if we don't dig to get the truth about whatever it is we're dealing with, the first quote in the textbook, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Those are words of Jesus. McNeil Young was an excellent practitioner, and he drowned, pronounced dead. He had a conversation with himself while his friends that were out there swimming with him, they were all lamenting over him passing on. They were friends. So the conversation he had with himself was, did he have any other business to take care of, or should he go on? He was concerned about whether he could help humanity on anything, and he was a Christian Science practitioner. So it was an easy decision. He said, yes, I can do more good in this so-called human life as a Christian Science practitioner. So he woke himself up, carried on his practice. In fact, he ended up teaching the normal class, which is the class which teaches other Christian Science practitioners to become teachers. That's the highest level of class. So we have a choice. Do we want to know what we're doing before we do it? Bicknell Young had students come to him wanting to become a patient, and they wanted him to solve their business problems. He found they didn't know how to run their business. They didn't know the principles of operating a business. If you've ever been in business, you know there are several departments for the business to operate properly. The owner should know how each business functions, or he needs to have people that he hires that are experts in each of those departments. And he should know enough about it to make sure that the experts are doing what they're supposed to do. He had to send them away. He said, you have to start by learning your business. And if you're abiding by the laws of God, you will be having the benefit of abiding. And then if you've done your best and you get stuck on something, then come and see me. If we don't do our part by striving to be in alignment with the laws of God, and principle, of course, is right there in the middle of the seven synonymous terms. If we don't know the principle of what we're doing, then we better go back to the drawing board and learn it. A woman can be a beautiful homemaker, but it's not by accident. She has to strive to do it. In fact, there's a lot of variables involved to be a good homemaker. Just one thing, which is preparing food. There's a lot of variables involved there to do it right. Schedule. If you have children at home, and maybe you're in an area where there is no school bus and they have to be transported to school, there's a lot of things to coordinate. A lot of variables in order to have a pleasant home that you're operating. We recommend that people become very proficient in time management, goal management, priority management, very proficient in knowing how to read. Mortimer Adler was the senior editor for Encyclopedia Britannica for some, I think it was like 40 years. He wrote a book, How to Read a Book. Now, in this day and age, there is very little reading done, but it's much more difficult to learn if you're not utilizing reading as part of the function of learning. We have a button on our website that says, Heal Everything. And we give you what we know is a process that works. And I've already mentioned the most important one to start with, and that is make sure that you're living a life of giving, not taking. There's a process that's involved that we know is successful. And if you have any question about it, you're welcome to call us about anything in the Bible, or any of Mary Baker Eddy's writings, or anything in the prayer treatments. We're here to help. We're here to serve anyone that is open to self-improvement. The next one is, love destroys hate. That's the next key point. Now keep in mind that everything that is about God is talking about spirit being the substance. So if you're talking about divine life destroying death, or truth destroying error, love destroying hate, you have to be thinking about looking through the lens of spirit. With love, for example, you can't be dealing with a sensual, materialistic love and wonder why you have problems. spiritual love is the opposite of hate. A material sense or a sensual sense of love is not true love. So you're not going to have the stability, the permanence that you have if you're really loving spiritually. I'm sure you can figure that out. And there's a very definite line between loving and not loving. And if you're not loving, you're doing the opposite, which is hating. You're hating the laws of God because you're violating them. If you're not loving spiritually, you're on the other side. If you're not following truth, you're on the other side. If you're not following divine life, you're on the other side. And the same with mind. If you're not following divine mind, then you're following mortal mind. If you're not following spirit, you're following matter. If you're not following spiritual sense, which is soul, then you're following material sense, which is material sense instead of spiritual sense. And the same with principle. It's a matrix. Think of a matrix that has 7 rows and 7 columns. They all interact with each other. If you're not using intelligence, which is a quality of mind, when you're living your life, then you're going to have a problem. If you don't use intelligence when you're loving, you're going to have a problem. And same with identification, which is soul, the spiritual senses. If you don't use intelligence, you're not even going to be able to tell what a spiritual seeing is, or spiritual, or feeling, or smell, or taste. This is from the textbook by Mary Baker Eddy. It's on page 128, which is chapter 6 on science, theology, and medicine. 3 sections to the chapter. And this is in the first section, which is on science. Question. Is there any benefit to living a life of Christian Science? And that, of course, includes the Golden Rule. The title that Mary Baker Eddy gives is Practical Science. The term science, properly understood, refers only to the laws of God and to His government of the universe, inclusive of man. From this it follows that businessmen and cultured scholars have found that Christian Science enhances their endurance and mental powers, enlarges their perception of character, gives them acuteness and comprehensiveness, and an ability to exceed their ordinary capacity. The human mind, imbued with this spiritual understanding, becomes more elastic, is capable of greater endurance, escapes somewhat from itself, and requires less repose. A knowledge of the science of being develops the latent abilities and possibilities of man. It extends the atmosphere of thought, giving mortals access to broader and higher realms. It raises the thinker into his native air of insight and perspicacity. There it is in a nutshell. Is there any benefit to living a life of Christian Science, which includes the Golden Rule? There it is, the answer, straight from Mary Baker Eddy. Again, that is page 128. In the chapter entitled Science, Theology, Medicine. The next key point is number 5. Being destroyed, sin needs no other form of forgiveness. I had a longtime friend that was an expert practitioner, and she asked me what my concept of sin was. She said, "What is sickness? If you believe somebody passed on, what is that?" What she pointed out was that if you believe anything is true that is unlike God, then you're violating the commandments. The very first commandment, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." If you believe anything is true that is unlike God, you're putting that before God. Because God is defined in Genesis chapter 1 that everything he made was very good. We know sin, disease, sickness, death is no good. Forget what insurance companies say. You know, if you have a real catastrophe and they've got little fine print in their contract that says that acts of God are excluded from coverage, you might have to go to court to get paid off on a claim. And maybe you don't win, because they claim catastrophes are acts of God. If you're going to assign evil to God, then you won't understand what I'm talking about. So sin is an all-inclusive term. It's an all-inclusive term. Just like disease is. Disease is anything that is discordant. Nikola Tesla said, if you have a health problem, it means there's something inside you that is upsetting your functions. He's referring to our thinking. Just like Shakespeare, there's nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. The second quote in the beginning of the textbook. Nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Nikola Tesla is telling us we've got something wrong with our thinking if we have a health problem. That is becoming more and more accepted by ones who are not real happy with the medical profession. The top doctors will tell you, and we have a whole presentation on this on the website, what some of the top doctors throughout history have stated about their profession, and it's accepted widely among the very top people in the industry of medicine, that the individual's attitude is a problem with a lot of people that come to them. And I realize that's a relative term, a lot. You know, how's a lot, you know? But they're recognizing the impact that an individual's attitude has on their health. They can do their examination from a medical viewpoint and find nothing wrong, and yet the person has a problem. They've admitted they can't cure it because they're not working on the same basis that Jesus did. Jesus never went to any kind of a witch doctor. That's what they were back in his day. But it's an individual decision, and you're all working out, everyone is working out their own salvation. No one has the right to condemn what someone else does. And that includes their choice, who they depend upon for their health. Mary Baker Eddy says that if we are a good Christian Scientist, we're not going to have any time to be messing around with someone else's thoughts. If we take care of our own business, we're not going to have any time to take care of other people's business, which is not our business to take care of anyway. Our business is taking care of our business. That means at the very top of the list is our thinking. And that includes thinking about ourselves, thinking about our friends, family, everyone else. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't take care of our responsibility, such as our family. All I mean is that we don't mess with other people's affairs that we shouldn't be messing with. Yeah, we've got to have discipline with children. That's our duty. Mary Baker Eddy says she makes strong demands on love. It's easy to understand what she's talking about. You can have a young child that hasn't learned about the dangers of walking across a public thoroughfare. They have to understand what the walking lights are, if there's those kind of lights there. They have to understand they must look. Just because you have a green light to walk across the street, it doesn't mean there's not a car that's running a red light. So we have to be utilizing our senses to be able to make intelligent decisions on what we do and what liberty we give to a dependent child. The Boy Scouts have meetings once a week, and this one troop set a goal that all of the scout members in that troop were to focus on helping other people. Doing a good deed is one of the mottos of Boy Scouts. And they were supposed to come back. It was a weekly meeting on a Monday night. And they were supposed to come back on Monday, the next Monday, and report to the group what good deed they had done during that previous week. I guess they were starting on just one a week. That's better than none. But it'd be good to try to do one a day. So anyway, they all reported it, and three different fellows, it was a small village, and three of them reported the same thing. They helped a certain person, and they all knew her by name because it was a small populated area. And they said that they had helped this certain lady across the street. She was an elderly woman. And a second one and a third one both said the same thing. They said, "How is it that all three of you did the same thing?" Their answer was, "She didn't want to go." They had to make sure they had a good deed to report, so they forced somebody to go across the street and consider that helping them when they didn't want to go. So it took all three of them. That's not the kind of deed we're talking about. Giving is something that requires good thinking, intelligence, perception, listening, paying attention, looking. What feeling do you get about doing it? They have to be receptive. You have to be very humble. When Jesus washed the feet of his disciples, he didn't command them to sit down. "Sit down, I want to wash your feet." That's one of the beautiful things about love. It's an atmosphere. So many times, it's not as important what you do as how you do it. Are you doing it with the atmosphere of love? Are you doing it with the atmosphere of wanting to do the right thing? Doing something that you could multiply, that you would want to multiply? Because that's when it really goes out into the atmosphere that everyone can benefit from, that has an open, you know, receptive thought to it. One of the favorite paintings of Jesus is standing at the door, standing at a door at a home, and knocking on it. And it was explained to me when I was young that that meant that he was knocking on our door of thought to see if we were going to let his thoughts be accepted. Mary Baker Eddy defined him as being the greatest man that ever walked on earth. Are we going to let that be our example? Okay, that's number five about sin. Number six is, does not God's pardon destroy anyone's sin, prophesy, and involve the final destruction of all sin? That's exactly right. If one is healed by a Christian Science practitioner, and then they do nothing more, they just go about their life the way it was before, is that a final healing? The answer is no. A healing needs to be for one with a receptive thought. And if it's receptive, they will become interested in finding out how it happened. And they will want to study and learn about it. Then, they will be on the path to be able to take better care of themselves when there's a need. And as mentioned before, it will build up a shield of prevention from a lot of things that would otherwise happen. I know of a fellow that was very aggressive as a driver and cars, and he raced a car and he raced a motorcycle, and that's a high risk situation. And he did this for several years. He had a Christian Science background, and so did his family. He never had an accident. Not one accident. That's prevention. I know of this situation where a young man was drafted after he got out of college, and to avoid being in the army, he applied for and was accepted for pilot training in the Navy. That has some risk involved. He had excellent grades and therefore was able to move into the category of the jet pilot training. And while he was involved in the training, there was a major cutback by the Secretary of Defense, and he got orders to go to Washington, D.C. His commanding officer in the training group couldn't understand how that could happen. He didn't have an intention of staying in for a career. He was only there because he had an obligation, because he was of age to serve military time. But that certainly wasn't any plan that he had, and no desire to be making that his career. But if he was going to be in there, he wanted to have something better than being an army that was on the ground and possibly shooting guns and all that kind of stuff. So he was given orders, unbeknownst to him, how it happened. I mean, he didn't apply for that. But he got orders to go to Washington, D.C. And that's really where the premium people in the military works for at least part of their tour. But they're only the cream of the crop. That's why his commanding officer couldn't figure it out, because he hadn't been in there long enough to even finish the pilot training. And of course, whenever you finish the pilot training, then you go into a war zone. And the U.S. is always in a war somewhere, if not several places at the same time. So he would have been in combat duty, flying a jet fighter plane. High risk. It was prevented. He didn't do it. He ended up being out in a year and 10 months because he had a particular task that he was assigned to do, and when he got it done, he could leave, because his choice was not to stay in as a career officer. So he was very pleased. He was young, just out of college, and he was married. His wife was very pleased. Parents. These kinds of things are natural, and they come as a natural unfoldment. Prevention. So valuable. I'm looking at the comments by John L. Senton, who did a scientific analysis of the entire textbook, and we always like to look and see if there's any particular comments there that aren't covered, that we've already covered, or wasn't in the original text. And it looks like he's basically summarizing some of the things that we added as our comments. Yeah, I don't see anything new from him this time. Sometimes he has some very enlightening things. So that's the end of this plank number 30. And since I mentioned the diapason of heaven, I'll read one of them to you. And since this plank is about pardon, that means that we have done something that is based on matter or a false sense of identification, broken a principle. See, a lot of different ones of the synonymous terms could apply here. Life is a very connected one, because if it's a pardon, we're assuming that there's, you know, something that was done in the life that requires a pardon. That's just one way to look at it. So I will read to you The Diapason of Heaven by Mary Baker Eddy on the topic of life. And if any thought comes to me while that is being recited, which does happen from time to time, I will add that after I say amen on the prayer, because that'll be an extra thought, and I don't want to be that part of the prayer. So I will add that. And also, we always put the time and date at the end so that there's a record. If you're listening to it, you'll maybe want to know when it was and repeat the title. So if you wait until the recording totally stops, then you won't miss anything. Or maybe you want to miss it. Maybe you're tired of hearing it. You can stop it right now. Anytime. You're in control of your fingers on your recording or listening device. Okay, here is The Diapason of Heaven with a focus on life by Mary Baker Eddy. Life is holy. We must hallow this word, for it is a sacred name for God. Declare often, there is only one life, and this is God. There is no personal life. My life is God, an infinite, incorporeal, all-encompassing, all-present, all-active, everlasting life. Declare that God, good, is the only life of man and the universe. Life is divine. Divine life is my God, and my God is life. Life is enthroned in my consciousness. This is the word of God. Declare all the truths about life. Claim this revealed life as yours. All of life is right where you are right now. Amen. Yes, there is an additional thought and that is that the left, far left column on the website, on the home page, the website again is MBE for Mary Baker Eddy, just the initials, MBEinstitute.org. In that far left column, there are a lot of very important definitions and other topics that one should be familiar with all the time. And also below the left column, there is another section where there's a series of topics that go all the way across the width of the page, and it's recommended that one read those and get a good understanding. And most of the things on the home page have a link you can click to see the full presentation. You will likely benefit from seeing the full presentation on each one of the topics that are on the home page. Also, you may want to take a look at the presentation on Heal Everything. And there's a button in the menu and also down in the footer. I'm sorry, not in the, well, yeah, there's a link in the menu, but also in the header at the top and in the footer. Heal Everything. It is February 14, 2026 at 1751. Thank you for listening to this prayer treatment on plank number 30 that's entitled Divine Pardon. The end.